3 of the 5-Star Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Arwen from Evenstar Wellbeing, and I'm delighted to be back hosting this third series of the show. I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the lands on which this show is produced, the Wadawurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. This land is stolen land, and sovereignty was never ceded. This land always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Whether you're new or a returning listener, I'm so pleased to have you here. If you're new, there are 49 episodes across series 1 and 2 for you to catch up on. There's so much goodness there, so please get into it. My website is evenstarwellbeing.com, and you can find all the episodes there, as well as all the information you need about my services as a holistic health coach and healer. So, on to this new series. Once again, I have a wide-ranging guest list to bring to you this season to help you feel better, be better, and do better in all aspects of your well-being and life. If you enjoy the show, it's super helpful if you share it with others that you think will get something from it, and it's even better if you rate and review the show on the platform that you're listening to it on, because then it will reach more people who you don't know but who will benefit from listening. So you're really paying it forward. I hope you get enjoyment and, even more importantly, education from this series. Be well. Well, hello and welcome to episode 56 of the 5-Star Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Arwen from Evenstar Wellbeing, and I'm delighted to bring you another interesting and wise guest on the show today. Have you ever wondered what your true soul purpose is in this lifetime? David Green is here to help you answer that question. David is a musician, author, inventor and rabbi, and he wants to help you become more aware of your unique personality and to find a meaningful path to achieve your purpose in this world. It is a fairly deep conversation, I guess, but it's one that I'm sure that you're going to get a lot out of. Enjoy. Okay, hello everybody, and welcome today to another fabulous interview today with David Green. David is an author, composer, and inventor, and he's worked with some of the most famous names in music and is an award-winning film producer. But he's on the show today to help you and me become more aware of our unique personalities and mission in this world. In other words, what I like to call our soul purpose. So, David, welcome today. I'd really love it if you could start out by telling us a bit about you, your background, where you've come from to be where you are now, doing what you are doing now.
Wow, that's a long story to be made short. I am from Toronto originally. I say the word about like that. And I grew up with, when I was 16, all I wanted was to be successful in the music business. And I was running way too fast and very disconnected from my soul. And my whole goal was to be an artist without sacrificing my artistic integrity, mainly as a jazz musician, but be successful in the pop market, which seems a bit of a contradiction, but it's what I really wanted. And I was running very, very fast to try to get there. And thank God I made some progress, became a staff writer for a record company in Canada called A&M Records at the time. By 18, I was in Hollywood recording an album. And the producer that worked with me had won numerous Grammy Awards in the past. And he couldn't accept his award should he have won that year. So he asked me if I would accept it on his behalf. And as a newcomer in the business at 18 years old, that was like a dream come true, as a chance to rub shoulders with all the big players, look like I must be successful if I'm accepting a Grammy on behalf of this gentleman, Gene Page. And I was very excited that I rented a tuxedo and his limousine picked me up. And we're heading down the highway to the Grammys. And I had a terrible panic attack. I was so scared that he would win. And I would have to go up there and accept the award in front of thousands of people and millions of people watching on TV, and that I was going to like forget his name or something. I just was so nervous. And I think that was the first time I prayed in my life, because I prayed that he would not win. I don't think he was happy. He'd be too happy to know that I was praying for that. But thank God my prayers were answered and he did not win. But after the Grammys was an event that took place for all the VIPs. And since I was nominated, I had a pass. I was allowed to go to this party. And they had all these different rooms in this big hotel set up, the ballroom with Count Basie's orchestra playing. And they had the disco room. And then they had this one room where there were televisions playing the Grammys, because if your artist had performed that night, they wanted to see how they did. And there was this big spread of food there. And I walked in and I actually saw one of my favorite musicians of all time. He was like my idol. And he won a Grammy that year for a pop song, but he's one of the most incredible jazz musicians alive. And I looked at him and he looked terribly depressed.
Who was it?
I don't want to say. The tradition of not speaking badly about people. So, he was an incredible, but he's like one of the top jazz musicians still alive today. And I stopped and I thought to myself, and I had this incredible vision that came from above and from within my soul that said, you are running way too fast to become something that could actually be depressed. What you have to do is discover your inner happiness, and then use your music as an expression of that happiness rather than running after the goal as if it's going to provide happiness. Because there you are looking at the person who personifies the absolute success that you're running after, and he does not look very happy. And that was to me a tremendous blessing in my life, because at an early age, I was able to turn around 180 degrees and begin a journey, which I call Journey to the Real You. A journey inwards to who you really are. And I actually produced an album called The Journey to the Real You. That's the title song from it. But what happened was I went to college, studied music composition in Bloomington, Indiana for 3.5 years. And then I still felt, you know, that was a different type of artsiness that I had to live up to. And it wasn't me. And I used to, for example, go to a park down the street, and there was a ditch in the park, and I used to lie in the ditch and just feel like I was part of the earth. And like, I just wanted to separate from all the noise of having to be this artsy artist and perform and be weird in order to be considered creative. And I just felt this connection with this much bigger thing when I lied in the earth and felt myself, as it says in the Bible, says that we come from dust of the earth and we'll return to the earth. So I felt like I was part of the earth. And then what happened was I started feeling certain contradictions in my religious identity, and I decided that I had to go to Israel to truly find my soul. And so that's what I did. And when I was there, I went to what's called the yeshiva, where we studied Jewish philosophy. But I was there with about 30 guys who had all come from completely unaffiliated backgrounds, who had traveled the world exploring different religions, and then came home to their own Judaism in Israel. And after a number of months of questioning, I just found an incredible connection between the land and my soul and the stage I was life I was at the time. And I still live in Israel. I lived in Toronto for a little while again, but I'm based in Israel now, and I became a rabbi. I continue to do my music. I teach a lot. I study a lot. And I'm involved in various businesses that because rabbis don't make money. as an inventor, I have technology that I sell. I patent and sell technology. So that frees me up to have the time to be able to put my heart into trying to help this world become a better place.
Mm. So when you said you prayed for the first time in the limousine on the way to the Grammys, do you mean that literally? So was it that you weren't brought up in your faith, or?
Yeah, I was not brought up in my faith. I brought up with a strong Jewish identity, you know, feeling part of something bigger than me, you know. But when I went to synagogue, it was just, I just had no connection whatsoever. I was just more doing what my parents wanted me to do. And I would only go a few times a year. That was, you know, they have these big buildings that sit empty all year round until Rosh Hashanah, the New Year, and Yom Kippur. And, you know, I was extremely assimilated. And so that actually worked to my advantage in many ways, because people who grow up in a religious environment often don't, their religiosity has sort of been put on them as a child. So there's a point where you have to grow it out of your child clothes and put on mature adult clothes. And I had the privilege of being an adult looking at Judaism for the first time. And therefore I was able to look with a much more mature eye and not do it just because I was being told by somebody that it's the right thing to do. And it became much more a real part of me, and I was applying it to so many important things in my life. There's nothing that made my music flourish more than discovering my soul. The best music school I ever went to was when I was actually living in an apartment looking over the Western Wall and the Temple Mount and seeing everything I was learning carved in stone. In fact, I have a video on YouTube called Jerusalem, Eye of the Universe. And it's just me throwing out my passion for this feeling I have that's connected to the actual stone, to the ground, to the archaeological, you know, imprints of our history. And so I felt that on a very deep level. And so I had a jazz band. I used to perform every Saturday night there. And I started getting all these gigs playing piano on albums and writing music for various projects. So it was fantastic. I had a reawakening or an awakening of my soul and ways of expressing it within context of, even though there's a lot of rules in the Jewish religion, those are sort of like the base, where it's just like we as human beings all have certain things that we all have the same. I can go to the same eye doctor as you, even though our eyes are different colors and different shapes. The doctor knows, because there's certain scientific consistencies that work through all of us. So too, the commonality that is within Judaism and with the laws of that seem somewhat restrictive. On top of that, it very much encourages us to discover who we are and find out why did God put us in this world, and what is the specific mission that I'm here to achieve? And that, as an artist, became such a focus of my spiritual development, because all that kind of artsiness and individuality that I was spending within the world of music, now I was spending it in the world of life. It was part of my essence of who I am, and wanting to know why I was created, like why was I put into this planet? Why did my family survive the Holocaust and others didn't? Like, there's something meaningful that I have to get in touch with. And that was my mission, was to get in touch with that.
Mm. So what age were you when you kind of realized that you wanted to discover that? And you know, at what point did you have a understanding or awareness that it was your soul that you were trying to get in touch with?
Well, on an experiential level, first of all, it was my early 20s that I went to Israel.
Right.
And on an experiential level, I felt my soul, just as a musician. Most artists have a certain connection to spirituality. Some of them know it, and some of them don't know it. But when you're reaching for sparks of inspiration, that's a spiritual process. Mm-hmm. But once I started studying, then it was very, very open what I was looking for. It was a very direct exploring what is the soul, and what is the soul longing for. And in my new book called Pictures of Your Soul, it's all describing the kind of questions that people think that you can't answer, because it's all about the soul, which is spiritual, and yet we learn so much anatomy of the soul, how it connects to the body, why it doesn't fly away from the body if it's spiritual, all these types of questions. So my book goes through that with illustration, and it's based on a Hasidic masterpiece called the Tanya, which gives you a tremendous amount of information on what the soul is and what it's longing for and how to lift yourself up from a dark place into a light place and all those types of issues. My other book is called A Book About You, and that's more individuality. How do you discover what your particular mission is in this world and what is your personality? And so I'm happy to share any of these.
I want to know the answers to all of those questions. Yeah. So,
you asked me and I'll go from there.
Yeah. So perhaps starting with that individuality and life purpose, because regardless of, how anybody feels about their spirit, their soul, my belief and yours clearly is that we are, a spirit in a physical body. But for more people, perhaps to start with, it's easier to grasp that concept of individuality and life purpose. So, yeah, I'd love to. I understand you have a method of helping people to discover that. And obviously, I don't want you to tell us the whole book, because we want people to buy the book. But just, if you can give us some ideas of perhaps how people should start that, or, just what your process is.
Sure. Well, nothing I'm saying is anything I invented. This is all based on rabbinical and biblical sources. When we learn in the first part of the Bible in Genesis about the forefathers, so each one of them represents a certain type of personality. Abraham was one of Chesed, it's called, which is kindness. And these are godly attributes that he put into the world when he created the world and when he created us. So the three personalities of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we all have that within us. But one of them is more dominant than the others. And there's this principle from Ethics of Our Fathers that says that the world stands on three things. And those three things are correspond with the Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet. These are three attributes. Like a tripod, if you take one away, then the whole thing falls over. So a person needs to have all three of these. So even though you can discover what your essential personality type is, it means that it must be complemented by the other two. So on the other hand, if you don't give enough fuel to that essential part of you, then you're going to fall down into a more depressing state, to a place where you're not expressing who you are and feel like I'm missing out on life. So the idea is to tap into your strengths and now acknowledge that the weaknesses you have are sort of like they come as part of the package. For example, if someone is a very kind person, they're a chesed personality, they're a loving personality. So often that person has a hard time with time management, because they are so into loving people that if they make an appointment to meet you at 8 o'clock, the likelihood of them coming at 8 o'clock is so slim, because they see somebody else they like on the way and they've got to give them big hugs and they got to talk about what's going on and like when we're going to get together next. I haven't seen you in a whole 24 hours. This is crazy. What's going on? And they feed the cat on the, that needs a little cup of milk on the way, and all kinds of acts of kindness actually remove them from time, and they will come late to someone they actually love very much. They have a hard time with that. And there's even way that people dress reflects that kind of personality. I taught for over 25 years a series of classes on this. And what I did was I gave people the Kabbalistic foundations of each of these personalities. And then I had them describe what would a person be like if they were based on this godly attribute of chesed, of kindness? And they would tell me right down to what kind of shoes they wore. I didn't have to tell them anything. And it was the same list every time I taught it, hundreds of times. And they all spelled it out the same way. So I have a personality test on my website where people can actually go, and with 19 questions, they can get the profile of how much of each of these personalities they are. And my book, each chapter is about the personalities, what the strengths and the weaknesses are. And then I go on to tell them about how to make choices in life and use that information in a very concrete way, as opposed to just pop psychology's kind of use of the personality types. So there's that process of finding oneself is by identifying what's unique about them. And this process helps them zoom in on it. Of course, it goes a lot deeper than that, but it begins the process of discovering what is the root of your personality from a spiritual standpoint. But there's another aspect of that, and that is based on the first two words that were said to Abraham, which are lech lecha, go to yourself. And he was told to discover who he was. Go first by removing distraction, which is remove yourself from the environment that you came from, which is one of idol worship and one of all kinds of pagan ideas that he had to lift himself out of in order to see God as one. He needed that space to be able to discover his true faith. And so removing yourself from the environment that you grew up in, and also means the internet, your phone, all the distractions of all the social pressure of trying to be all these things that everyone's telling you have to be. So you remove yourself from that, and that cleans out the passageway to the soul, because now you can start to hear who you really are. Mindfulness meditations work on that principle. We move up into another level beyond that, called Empty Spaces, which is the title of my second album, which has meditations in it that help you move up the ladder, which I can describe later. But the second part, lecha, go to yourself, is the proactive part of discovering your personality. But lech is a very important stage in that. So even though I discussed the idea of three primary personalities, one should at least simultaneously be working on removing all these voices that are telling you you're somebody that you're not.
Mm. Yeah, I love that idea of going and then finding the emptiness. So what are the other two? So you mentioned kindness.
Right. So the second one is called Gevura. Gevura means strength. Mm-hmm. But it says, who is a strong person? It says in Ethics of Our Fathers, who is a strong person? A strong person is someone who can conquer their evil inclination. It means a person with self-discipline. So that type of personality you'll find, everyone tells me, where are they at 5 a.m? They're at the gym. They have keys on their belt to open up the office because they're the first one in. They turn on the copy machine. They turn on, you know, on the printers and the coffee machine, and they are the ones that are always there to create structure and a sense of judgment, and cleanliness, or they're just extremely organized. That's Gevura. That's the strength personality that Isaac represented. And Jacob represented what's called Tiferet, which is harmony, which is more something that a person who is a little more reserved and more in the mind. That personality is a very intellectual type of personality. It doesn't mean they're smarter than anyone else, but it does mean that what stimulates them is more ideas. And they're very good at looking at a situation and not becoming too emotionally drawn in by looking at one hand, okay, let's look at the pieces of the puzzle here. On one hand, this person is saying this, this person is saying this. Now I'll make a calculation as to what is the right thing to do and make sure that I haven't left out the mind or the heart, and they're both together move forward. So their sense of judgment is very good. But their vulnerabilities is that they start to think they're smarter than everybody else, and therefore ego is a very difficult thing. These three things are all correspond with negative attributes as well. So I don't want to go too deep into it, but it's all intertwined with major events that took place in the Bible during just before the forefathers came to be, like Cain killed his brother out of jealousy. The opposite of that is chesed, kindness. So when Abraham brought kindness into the world, it was sort of the rebuild what jealousy had brought in. And each one of them correspond, but I don't want to say too much at one time.
But. Yeah. So there's always, the balancing negative dark side of anything, isn't there? So yeah, that totally makes sense. So you mentioned, the phones, the screens, all the distractions we have, but how would you suggest to somebody that they try to create the empty space so that they can get more in touch with their spirit, their soul?
Well, a lot of that has to do with what people believe in to start with. I know that I have a soul inside me, and the teachings tell me that there actually are two souls. There's a divine soul and an animal soul. The pure divine soul is something that is so precious, and nobody can touch it and hurt you because it is pure. And so no matter what mistakes you make in life, there's this pure soul inside of you, which means we all have a gold mine deep down inside. And if a person is digging for gold and they go in their backyard and just randomly look anywhere, they're going to be very frustrated. But if you actually know that there's a gold mine there, then every shovel you dig is coming closer and closer to that gold mine. So if you know that you have a gold mine within you, then the process of removing static from your ability to hear that gold mine, that divine soul, is a very invigorating experience in itself. And it sort of, what happens is starts to build momentum. As long as you have this inner faith that you do have a soul, which is something that I can't even imagine not having, because otherwise, like, what are we as human beings? How could we be communicating to each other? Just like you can't see my brain waves, they're there because, your deductive reasoning means that I must have a brain that's thinking. So too, the just being a human being, which is, I feel this spirituality running through me, I know that soul is there. And I have experiences of where the soul is more enlightened than others. So I have a relationship with my soul. And so therefore, people need to allow themselves the chance to find that soul. If they don't believe the gold mine's there, they're not going to dig. So regardless of what level of faith you have, at least give it a shot. Give it a try to start removing all the garbage that's covering up that beautiful soul, and polish it off and let it shine. Actually, one of my songs is called Candle in the Night. A candle is a very spiritual thing. It actually says in Proverbs that the candle of God is the soul of man, which is why you see, and my background is part of my book cover, which is you see a selfie, you look into the phone, instead of seeing your physical self, you see the spiritual self, which is metaphorically represented by a flame. And if a person knows that that flame is there, so then you go through this lech lecha experience of removing all this, static. And once you start to see a little bit of that flame, when you light a flame in a dark room, it lights up the whole room. And so when you start to dig down deep and you just get a little glimpse of that soul, then it shines and can light up a very dark place. And so there's an advantage actually to the darkness, because it allows you to actually see, and you become a vessel for this shining light that's within inside you. And so, it doesn't have to be so complicated. We pray three times a day, and that is a meditative process of getting touch deeper and deeper into the soul. But people can go through a meditative process becoming aware, first of all, of their breathing. Breathing is a very spiritual thing, because when we were created, it says that God breathe the soul into man. So the sound of hey is the fifth letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which it represents the five levels of the soul that God breathed into us. So when we become aware of that hey, become aware of the soul having five levels, we can actually tune into them. And the first level is called nefesh, and that is the nefesh is connected to the blood, which is why we feel that the soul is moving all around the internal body with the blood. If you try to say, well, where's my soul? Like, where are you going to point? It's actually connected to the blood. And many times in the Bible, it says that dam hu hanefesh, the blood is the nefesh. But that's only the lowest level of the soul, which is connected to the body through the, believe it, there's actually a higher level of blood. It's almost like a vapor kind of blood. So that's where the physical and the spiritual connect. And then we move to the next level, which is called ruach, which resides in the heart, which is where you completely surrender yourself to this dark space, which is infinity. Infinity is something which, if you let go and allow your soul to travel there, it's a very scary thing at first, but actually you're connecting to the infinite. I love the idea of touching the infinite. It seems like a contradiction, but we actually can touch the infinite if we allow ourselves to go there. And that's what I call empty spaces. On my new album, there's a meditation that takes you up into that level of empty spaces. And then there's something called the neshama, which is in the brain, and something called chaya and yechida that are above and too lofty for us to actually grasp. So people can climb that ladder of higher levels of consciousness, tuning into the soul and its various parts, which is why in my new book, Pictures of Your Soul, the more you read it, the more it becomes actually something you can actually imagine being inside of you, because it discusses it. It's like, you know, if you don't know somebody and you can't know anything about them, it's a very hard thing to have a relationship with them. But if someone starts to describe who they are, then you start to develop a relationship because their personality, it becomes something much more concrete. And if you start developing a relationship to what the soul is and how it's made up, then you start saying, oh, okay, now I know what I'm reaching for. Now I know what to dig for. I understand it's not just this sort of flame on its own. It's got many dimensions to it, and those dimensions help us connect through the understanding of what the soul is.
And so, other than doing a meditation practice or a practice of prayer, Are there any other things that you'd suggest on a practical level for people to, you know, do some of that decluttering?
I mean, people have to discipline themselves to look at, like, what are they doing with their time? What are they running after? Somehow, I find certain people who are doing tons of things with their lives and achieving lots of things. And there's other people who look like they're running around getting all kinds of things done, but they're getting very little done. We have a tendency to want to run and do this and do that, but half the time we're just an autopilot. So what we have to do is we have to turn off the autopilot and step back and take a big breath and ask yourself, what do you really want? What is it that you're really looking for? And take out a pad of paper and write down, what are your priorities? What are you looking for? And then ask yourself, you know, when I get up in the morning, the various things that I do with my life, how much do they have to do with that picture that I drew on the page or the graph or the list of things? And have the discipline, have the guts to be able to remove the things that are unrelated to who you really are. And that's a very simple process, but it can be a very difficult one to actually implement. It's worth writing it out. And, you know, it's an amazing thing how I've seen people who have been extremely inspired, right? I used to run a summer program where students from American colleges used to come to Israel, and they were extremely inspired and wanted to make major life changes. But what I did was I had them write a letter to themselves, and they would read it a month later, and they wouldn't be able to identify who was that person, because what person was like on a high, you know, they were so inspired. The question, who's the real person? Is it the person who wrote the letter, or is it the person who's now back into their whole lifestyle, meeting you at Starbucks at a certain time, then I got to go to the office, and then I got to go here, and then I got to go run here, and if I don't, I can't exist, you know? And it's important to recognize that it's a hard thing to hold on to that awareness. And therefore, every day you should take out that piece of paper and, you know, refine it and create for yourself the tools by, like, there's a challenge that many people have of their ego. So, for example, one of the rabbis tells us that in one pocket you should write the verse that I am created from dust of the earth, which means like I'm nothing, right? And there's another verse that says, "Bishvili no'ivra olam," for me the world was created, as if the whole world was created for me, which it was, because the world that you live in is all, you know, based around you. But the problem is there's a risk of the ego being inflated when you think that way. So at times when you're having a hard time, you bring out the one that says "Bishvili no'ivra olam." When your ego's getting carried away, you take out the one that says "I'm dust of the earth." Now, those are two very simple statements, but if you carry them around with you, then it has a profound effect on you. So same thing, the messages you want to tell yourself based on the calculations you make in your life of what you're doing too much of, what you're doing too little of, where your true fulfillment's coming from. If you make that like a diary for yourself, then you have to review it over and over again in order to teach the negative voices within us not to fall and buy into some other argument. And we have, as I mentioned, an animal soul that's there to try to pull us away. The whole analysis of what that is, you know, I go into the book, but we're created in a way where even the simple process of remembering what we're here to do with our lives and how we want to prioritize our lives, it's very difficult to hold on to unless we have a constant reminder. And so for some people, their meditation would be just to review what they themselves believe to be true. A person can have decided for sure they're going to stop smoking, but every day is the last cigarette, you know, so it's very, very hard. They can be on a diet and they purposely walk by the ice cream store so that they'll be tempted by the time they get there. You know, so things that we know we want, it doesn't mean it's easy to implement. So we need to constantly review that. And so when it comes to getting in touch with ourselves, we have to do the same thing. We have to recognize that, okay, you can't just decide what's important to you and expect that the next day you're going to be able to implement it. We need a constant reminder and commitment, the gevurah that I described before, that type of personality that gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and is implementing the plan. We have to wake up that gevurah within ourselves to implement the plan of how we're going to move forward, living who we really are.
And I know that you have a term called spiritual self-defense, and I'd love to hear more about that as well. And is that something that helps? Because I know that being aware of our self, of our spirit, being in touch with that, being in touch with our soul, can help with mental health issues for sure. So I'm not sure whether the spiritual self-defense helps with that or if that's two separate things, but can you just talk a bit about that as well?
Okay, briefly, the spiritual self-defense is basically the movie The Karate Kid. I don't know if you remember that from years back. What the spiritual development is mirrored by the physical development, which means that we can learn from developing the skills in karate, I just use as an example, where if you go to karate class, you don't go in and learn how to fight right away. What you have to do is you learn how to punch. You have to learn how to kick. You have to connect these little modules of punching and kicking one after the other until you have a whole routine. And you can't expect to end up in a dark alley with someone trying to beat you up and that you're going to say, well, I learned in karate that I should punch this way. There's no time. You're going to get smacked around too quickly. So what we do is we develop a reflex response to whatever is trying to attack us, so that we're already ready to punch. My niece was on a bus once. She's a, you know, fairly strong woman, but she, I forget what type of self-defense she was studying, but she thought someone was going to attack her from behind, and she took them and flipped them over, and she's a sweet girl. She says, "Oh, I'm so sorry. The person didn't mean that." And she flipped them over. And that's the trigger that we have to have, that when something looks like, you know, someone's punching us in the face, we're ready to respond as in karate. Same thing on the spiritual level. I use the example of the ice cream store, right? A spiritual development means I know that I have the vulnerabilities to fall, and therefore I'm going to prevent myself from going into a dangerous territory where I could be pulled. I want to avoid the ice cream store and walk a longer route in order to avoid, you know, the enemy that's trying to work me. And the strength of doing that, you may say, well, you're being a wimp. You're going in the opposite direction because you can't handle the challenge. Yeah, I'm going to be strong enough to know that I can't handle the challenge. Mm-hmm. That's a strength. So spiritual self-defense is like, oh, there's that voice that wants me to do something that's below my dignity. Oh, I know how to fight back, and I'm going to punch when it's time to punch. I'll be ready for that and say, oh, I recognize that voice. I'm going to prevent myself from going there. So that's the spiritual self-defense, is learning spiritually what your vulnerabilities are and learning how to step forward before they take over you, and make sure that it's your divine soul, the wishes of the essence of who you are, that's leading it. There's an analogy that we have of a somebody riding a horse, right? Who's in control, the horse or the rider? So we have an animal soul that's like the horse, and we have the divine soul that's the rider. And what we want is to always be the rider in control of the horse. Now, the horse is a very valuable thing. It's a physical thing, and we don't knock down the physical world. Spirituality needs the physical world in order to elevate it and utilize it. The holy of holies of a house is considered the bedroom, where a man and woman have intimacy, and they're connecting on a very high spiritual level through that high level of physical pleasure. So physicality is something that we are supposed to utilize. So the rider is supposed to take that horse and use it to go do good in the world, right? But if the horse takes control, then you're in big trouble, because the desires of the animal will use the same physicality for impure things that take you away from your soul. So spiritual self-defense is that ability to be the rider, to be the one in control, and know all the tendencies of the animal's soul, and know, no, you can't go there. No, I'm going to keep you and utilize you to elevate you and elevate you through spirituality.
Okay. And then what about, what are your thoughts on this kind of awareness of your true self helping people to deal with mental health issues?
I myself have suffered from depression in my life. I've been to hell and back in very difficult times. And what I've learned to do is see God in a very dark place. Like I said, the candle in the night. If a person, there's a very direct connection between your spiritual health and your mental health. I'm not telling people to go off medication, but I am telling that if a person gets in touch with what makes them truly happy, with what the essence of their soul, if they discover what is unique about their soul and what their soul mission is in this world, then that person can then start to utilize that to reach for something higher than themselves. In other words, you know, in a marketing company, I used to run an internet marketing company, and when we worked on projects together, we all felt this connection to each other because we were working on something higher than ourselves, and all kinds of energy that seemed dormant before just came out and like was able to thrive because there was something more meaningful that we were all working on together. If a person discovers what their mission is in this world and invests in discovering that, it doesn't mean they're going to discover it in its totality within the first process of searching for it. But if they make it important to discover who they are and what the essence is of their personality and what truly makes them happy, not what the world's telling them makes them happen, what truly makes them happen, then it's like pushing a button that energizes them and lifts them up above the depression. And so spiritual health, and it's part of mental health. It's totally integrated with each other. I just know for myself, when I'm involved in a project, you know, whether it be a business project or a spiritual project or a teaching project, once I get going with my creative energy, then I don't suffer at all from depression. And thank God haven't for many years, but I know what it's like to be there. And I also know that the surrounding circumstances at the time of depression, it made a lot of sense that I was vulnerable to it at the time, because I was sort of setting myself up for failure, setting myself up for depression. What we have to do is set ourselves up for happiness. And that can be a difficult thing, but yet it's so critical.
Okay, thank you. So I really would love to hear as well a bit about your life as an inventor. Like, you know, how did that start? What was the spark? And can you tell us anything about what kinds of things? I think you said it was technology, yeah? Right. Yeah, how does it come about?
It all started when I was a little kid sitting on the floor, where I had about three puzzles sitting in front of me, and I would work on one puzzle and get bored of that and then work on another puzzle. And my mother would say, no, put the other puzzle away. I'm not finished that puzzle. And I'm going to work on the second puzzle, work on the third puzzle, and go back and forth. And, thank God I'm ADD, which gives me the restlessness to always be looking for new inventions. You know, when I was that type of process of putting the puzzle together is very similar to writing music, where there's a chorus, there's a verse, there's harmony, there's like, and you want to get across a message, you want the emotions to be there, and you want it all to come together. So that's an inventive process. And so I always was creating gadgets, whether they were artistic gadgets or functional gadgets. But what really got me started was when I was in the film industry, I started noticing some technology, you know, green screen technology that, you know, superimposes people over backgrounds. And what I did was I reversed that technology, and I made it well before we and all these various devices came on the market. It enabled you to stand in front of a camera, and next to you in your room, in your setting, in your living room, would be Mickey Mouse dancing with you. The foreground was on a DVD that played through the device. And so I actually did a whole presentation for Disney, dancing with a character that I created, you know, singing the song I sang to my kids called Coochie Coo. And that was one technology that I sold for a very large amount of money to investors who then took it public, but didn't really make much out of it. But thank God I got my money before they took it in the wrong direction. Now I have a technology that's out on the market now called Eden Soles, which is a type of insole that you step on it and it shapes to your feet right away. And I remember going to the to get orthotics, and the doctor put my foot in this mold, and then I finally got these two pieces of plastic that were extremely uncomfortable, and I thought, like, why did I pay like $700 to get these pieces of plastic? And I realized, you know, there's ways of doing this for very, very cheap. So I have two patents in the area of insoles. And right now I'm negotiating with some major shoe companies to integrate it into their shoes to be part of their footwear. I have lots of them, but you know, that's the one that I've learned to focus on now. As I say, I'm an ADD personality. So a lot of the chesed nature also is that one that wants to give out a lot, and it doesn't, without gvura, it just gets spent. So I have a filing cabinet full of inventions, but if I try to do them all, nothing will happen. So I have to enforce gvura, that strength, that discipline, to say, I'm going to choose this invention now and make that my goal, to go after that, rather than trying to just have too many things to manage.
Yeah. So basically the spark comes from everyday situations where you just think, well, there must be a better way. And
yeah,
your amazing creative mind helps you to bring that to life. I just think that's incredible.
Well, you have to be a bit crazy. It helps be a little crazy, you know? What I do is I think of crazy ideas. Like one, I had something called liquid shirt, where if you get a stain on your shirt, you have this little marker that you write, you can color over it. And that way it looks clean until you actually do wash it. It's just crazy. So what I did was I have a process where I go on to the website of the patent office, and I start searching through patents that seem that they could be the same. And mm-hmm. I try to find a window that's wide enough where there's room for a new idea in between them. And I sometimes will modify the invention enough so that it stays clear from the other patents. And then I file what's called a provisional. A provisional patent application just costs about $160 rather than $5,000 with a lawyer. You can just put it in there, and now it's officially patent pending. So I have a number of patents where I just file them, and that way I can start dabbling a little with companies to see if they're interested in it. And if I find enough interest, then I'll follow up on that patent, because I know it's worth spending the legal fees on securing, because I do have interest in the market for it. And that's the process that I take. And unfortunately, my lawyers have been sending me bills of astronomical amounts, but I have to do it. So.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's just incredible. So I guess before we finish up, it's really important that you let people know where they can find all your work and, anything else that you'd like to share. So you mentioned the personality test that's on your website that I'm sure will have sparked some curiosity, but everything.
My website is called realyouproject.com. Mm-hmm. And at realyouproject.com, there's links to my books. There's an overview of the books. There's my music, just for like an initial, taste of it. But if you go to David H. Green on Spotify, Apple Music, all the streaming companies, then there's two albums there that I highly encourage people to look at. And if you listen to that and close your eyes, that itself, I think, can be a very spiritual experience, because all the songs are about peace of mind, windows of your mind, real you. It's all, journey to the real you. They're empty spaces. They're all songs that are there to help a person feel more connected to their soul. So David H. Green is for that. And on the same website is the personality test.
The Real You Project has the personality test. And
it's not the Real You Project. It's Real
You Project. Okay. And with the books and things, are they just available through the website, or are they available through Amazon or bookshops or anything as well?
Well, the first book was republished by a company called Morgan James in, out of New York. And they are it was published actually to reach a more non-Jewish audience. Mm-hmm. And so they put them in all kinds of stores all around, you know. Okay. I believe Barnes and Nobles. I'm hoping to get into the airport stores, you know, bookstores. But they're available on Amazon also, and but you can buy them directly from my website. Mm-hmm. Both versions are on Amazon, and my new book also is on Amazon and also from my website and in Jewish bookstores. So if you live in an area like in New York, there's Jewish bookstores, you can get it there.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. It's been a really interesting conversation, David. I really appreciate your time this morning. And I'm sure that everybody will get lots of inspiration out of what you've had to say.
And my email and phone number are on my website. If anyone wants to discuss any of the types of issues that we discussed tonight, I have years of experience of counseling people, and I'm not charging for it, but I feel people should feel comfortable to email me and ask questions, and I perhaps can guide them to take an important step that will help them proceed from there.
Wow, that's a very generous offer. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
So there you have it. I hope you got lots of practical tips from that conversation with David Green to carry us out of the episode today, rather than the usual theme soundtrack that I have on the podcast. We've got a song that is one of David's that he mentioned during the interview called Candle in the Night. I hope you enjoy that. Remember that all the details of how to access anything that David makes or does is available in the show notes. And if you would like to learn more about me or about Evenstar Wellbeing, then please just head on over to evenstarwellbeing.com, and everything that you could possibly want to know is there. Until next time, please be well. Looking around, I know that something's gotta change, 'cause there's so many people living their life in pain. And I know I shouldn't be thinking this way, but every day I pray it should be okay. Can't watch my life just slipping away. Light a candle in the night. It's a festival of beautiful light. It's a time to see the miracles everywhere in everyday life. Light a candle in the night. It's a festival of beautiful light. It's a time to see the miracles everywhere in everyday life. One little smiling face.